Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This week's episode is a little bit different. This is something that I haven't ventured into yet. However, this series on Netflix warrants its own episode. If you follow me on Instagram at Causing Friction, you know that I have discussed on stories made on Netflix. Now, if you have not watched the miniseries, heads up, this episode is going to discuss abuse, trauma, childhood trauma, but it's all from a very realistic point of view. Also, this is going to be full of spoilers. I'm going to be dissecting episodes. I'm going to be going through characters and their development. So if you're interested in watching something extremely provocative, raw, real, and also, to be honest, a series is actually going to cause you discomfort and going to make you feel something for the characters, I highly recommend pausing, pop on Netflix, search for The Maid, and watch it, and then come back to the summary. So, full disclaimer, if you are triggered by any of the topics that I listed before, maybe proceed with caution. I know for myself that there were some nights after watching an episode or two that I would feel extremely distraught and triggered and need to take a mental break. That is just how real this series is. And I just want to also say, respect your nervous system. Give yourself some compassion and kindness because this is hard to watch. It's hard to digest. And this is all coming from someone who is in therapy on a regular basis and who has been working on themselves and their mental health for years. So please listen to the way that your body reacts, the way that you feel when you're watching something like this. Not just this series either. I mean, you need to be cautious and pay attention to the way that your body is reacting on social media, when you're going to the movies, when you're watching TV, anything. Sometimes we want to watch things that relate to us and our stories, but also that can be difficult. And sometimes it's too hard to watch. Sometimes it brings up too much discomfort that we aren't ready to face. And speaking for myself, I know that it was really reassuring to see a story that is extremely relatable, but it also can cause someone who has PTSD a lot of unresolved trauma, a lot of harm. And self-care can also mean actively choosing to not consume any form of media, any TV series, anything online that triggers you. I was definitely warned before I watched the series, but I also felt extremely compelled to watch something to ensure that I felt seen and heard, and I was just so curious of the way that they were gonna depict the story. Wow. Was I ever seen and heard and validated? And it shocked me. This show is so well written. I am going to start by saying, yes, this is a TV show. However, it is based off of a book. And the author is Stephanie Land, and she's a New York Times bestselling author. It's a memoir of her own story, made, hard work, low pay, a mother's will to survive. And that was the catalyst for this series. It was created, written, produced by Molly Smith Metzler. So again, I didn't read the book. I watched the series. I did do research, and I'm going to reference the book, and I'm going to be referencing the original author and the original story at some points, but I am going to mostly base this off of this series, also because I know most people nowadays, they're not as into reading as I would like us all to be, myself included. So I'm going to start off by saying that the IMDb description of the show, which I use IMDb for so many references whenever I'm interested in a movie or I maybe don't recognize an actor's name, I use IMDb on a regular basis. So going to IMDb and reading the description of the show, it says, after fleeing an abusive relationship, a young mother finds a cleaning house's job as she fights to provide for her child and build them a better future. That's it. If you have seen the show, you know that is not an accurate depiction. Well, it's not that it isn't accurate. It is accurate, but it lacks. It is completely failing to mention the significant element of the plot that's systemic poverty in America. And the very first thing that I could tell from the story when I started watching within the first 10 minutes of that first episode is how real it was. I actually didn't know when starting the series that it was based off a book. My sister had recommended it. She said, whoa, heads up, triggering, also amazing. So I went into it not understanding that it was a book, that it was actually a memoir. And the first 10 minutes, I was like, this is based off someone's life. This is real. Because that is how brutally honest the entire show is. So let's go to the very beginning. So the show follows Alex, young mother. She's trying to escape that abusive relationship. And quickly, you start to understand a lot of backstory. And that involves a very difficult relationship with her mother, who she claims very regularly to be an undiagnosed bipolar woman. It also involves her partner, the one she is fleeing from, who is an alcoholic with explosive anger, who also has a job at a bar. It also involves a semi-estranged relationship with her father. You really don't get to see him until 50-60% of the way through the series, but you quickly learn that the father is just not in the picture. And it also involves Alex at the very beginning not having a job, not having education, and that their living situation is living in poverty. So the story really begins with Alex making the decision to leave her partner after a very scary domestic dispute. She flees in the middle of the night with her toddler. I believe she's 3 years old in the series. So when she flees in the middle of the night, she first tries to go to her mother. But she, on the drive, is considering her mental state. She's considering the fact that her mom lives in a trailer with her new boyfriend at the time. And she gets there and she realizes this is not best suited for my child either. And then you just watch Alex try to become self-sufficient. You see that she is hyper-independent, and you see that she doesn't want to rely on people, and that she doesn't feel comfortable going to anyone else. And you see her wanting to start a new life. You see that this is going to be the start of something. But you also quickly see that it's not that easy. So given the situation, Alex has nowhere to go. She doesn't feel comfortable going to police when she fled in the middle of the night. So she's kind of like, where do I go? Where do I end up? And she goes actually to a shelter, an abuse shelter. What I also learned is actually in the book, she didn't go to Stephanie, the author who the memoir is about. She actually didn't go to a all-female crisis of abuse shelter. She just went to a homeless shelter. But again, going to speak about the series. So she flees in the middle of the night. She ends up in the crisis shelter. They greet her with open arms and they are so willing to help. However, there's a couple issues that they need to break down. So she didn't go to the police and file any kind of report of what happened. Next, they are, of course, questioning, did you bring anything with you? Do you have ID? Do you have any proof that this is your child? Just so that they can set her up for success for what is about to happen. Because she fled with her child in the middle of the night. What Alex tries to do and what she feels is in her best interest is filing a no contact order. So similar to a restraining order. And her partner, his defense is that she is actually the bad parent, that she stole their child in the middle of the night, that she doesn't have a job, that she doesn't have a safe roof over her child's head, that she has nowhere to go, no family, no support. And this is difficult because anyone can see that this woman is distraught. However, the court, they don't see that. They see a mother who has no house. They see a mother who has no job. And then they see the father who has a full-time job, house, his supportive family is there in court. They have his back. But faced with the challenge of her partner and her in court calling her an unfit mother, what the court sees is a woman who stole a man's child away in the middle of the night, who has no job, no education, no stability to provide the child. And because there was no physical altercation, no physical proof of abuse, it's a he says, she says. Alex didn't file a police report the same night that she fled the home. So the court can deem the father the more fit parent, even though he is an alcoholic. But again, where is the proof? So at this point, their child is taken away from the mother and then forced into father's custody. So before I go into what's next, let's break down a few key elements that happened that are absolutely enraging. So first and foremost, it's the fact that emotional abuse is not seen in court as real abuse. I feel as though, yes, maybe the judge would have taken Alex's request for the no contact order into consideration had she filed a police report the same night. However, since there already is a stigma that yelling, screaming, punching walls, throwing objects, if they don't hit you, they only hit beside you, it's not real abuse. Despite the fact that almost half of the women and men in the United States have experienced psychological aggression by an intimate partner in their lifetime, 48%, it still isn't taken seriously because there aren't necessarily obvious physical marks on your body. The damage is more internal and mentally. Because of this stigma, people don't report abuse, which perpetuates the cycle even further. So cops and courts, they don't hear as many cases of emotional abuse because we feel like we won't be taken seriously when we do report it. Because when it's reported, it's chalked up to not being as bad as physical abuse or not as real as physical abuse. And I know this is also very different city to city. Maybe there are some cops who are extremely compassionate and willing to help. However, even from my own experience, it's not that I wasn't taken seriously. It's more until I mentioned that someone's hands were physically on me, could they legally take action? There isn't much that they can do unless he is causing harm to me or he is damaging my property. So what does this even come down to? In my opinion, this is an extremely old, outdated system, like most of the systems in place and a lot of the laws that are still holding up in court that make absolutely no sense nowadays. And in so many interviews, Stephanie Land, the original author and who the memoir is about, she explains that the worst part of all of this is that society tells parents they need to take care of their children, no matter what. But when she did just that, she was shunned. She was told to go back to her abusive partner and make it work because two parents are better than one, even if that means being an unsafe household. And how outdated and ridiculous is that to say nowadays two parents, despite the psychological damage that can occur, are better than one? She also explains how many people were so quick to judge her situation. They would say common phrases like, you shouldn't have chose him, you shouldn't be dating him in the first place. And anyone who has been in an abusive situation knows that those screaming matches, the name calling, it doesn't just happen on the first date, maybe not the second one. You might see a glimpse of explosive anger or heightened emotions. Maybe you might just chalk it up to that person being extremely passionate. But you don't assume it's because they're an abusive person. They're always given the benefit of the doubt. And the way that the show describes it, so a quote from Alex is, you're on your first date and he's all like, pass the salt. One day I'm going to strangle you, girl. And I can't help but laugh at that because it's so true. It's not that obvious. Abusers don't make it that obvious. So what happens next? Alex is now fighting to prove to the court that she's a stable mother. She is saying, screw trying to prove that he is abusive. They're clearly not going to see it because he hasn't caused me physical harm. But now this is going to be a fight that's going to shed light on poverty and the absolute chaos that is the American welfare system. So now that Alex is living in the crisis shelter for abused women and children because they see abuse as financial, as emotional, they see it as physical as well, but they understand that it is so much more than that. Alex is there alone, her child's been taken away, and she's depressed. She doesn't want to get off the floor, she doesn't want to do anything, but luckily she has a support system there who wants better for her. So Alex begins to rebuild. She attempts to get daycare for her child so that she can work, and she tries to find any means necessary to just be deemed a fit mother. How do you be deemed a fit mother? How do you prove to someone that you're a good mom? Well, you need to have a job and you need to have fit daycare and a support system. So this is what Alex needs to get in order. Quickly, going through the welfare office and going to government offices, while attempting to get daycare so that she can start to make money and really try to figure out her next move. The Netflix series quotes, "So I need a job to prove that I need daycare in order to get a job." And that sentence alone is so confusing, which is exactly what the entire system is like. This feels impossible. It's an impossible task that keeps families in poverty. And how are they expected to get out of a system that works like this? So on top of all of this stress, she has no way of getting into a subsidized daycare. Alex is left to just try get a job, but she doesn't have her SIM card. She doesn't have her ID. She basically has like nothing on her. Luckily, the shelter provides her with clothing. They provide her with an apartment, toiletries. Remember, she fled in the middle of the night. She didn't bring anything. She didn't think of bringing anything. This wasn't a plan of hers. She just knew she needed to leave and she saw her one way out. These shelters are a blessing. They run on donations and they can try for government grants, but also extremely competitive, and it's not very likely that it's going to happen. So luckily, the woman at the government office, while Alex is being interviewed, she recommends Alex to try to contact a job as a maid at Valued Maids, hence the name of the series and the book. So this is a place of employment with extremely high turnover, very low pay, and where you also need to purchase a lot of supplies to get started because you're kind of like a freelancer. And in Alex's journey at this job, she cleans some of the wealthiest people's houses on the island and also some of the nastiest places too. But while at the wealthy clients' houses, she really gets a look at the other side, a look into how the other half live. And this actually sparks something in Alex and an excitement in her again. She starts to write stories of clients' lives, about how miserable they are, about how bitchy they are, how they are cheating, or how their flight to Dubai was awful. Sometimes she'd be listening to people complain about their wealthy people problems, and sometimes she would also hear true painful life experiences, like the inability to conceive a child, which later in the series, she develops a relationship with a client, Regina. That's a total side plot of its own, and I'm not going to dive into because this is already long enough. So Alex's living situation is food stamps. She has scheduled visitation with her daughter. She's barely scraping by, and she's on 7 different government grants. A Pell Grant, SNAP, which is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, TEBRA, Home Tenant-Based Rental Assistance, LIHEAP, which is Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, WIC, Medicaid, and Child Government Grant. And these are all programs that she and her daughter need to just barely survive and to not starve. And the way that the show really depicts this is that every time Alex goes shopping with her welfare funds, food stamps, whether she's getting food or cleaning supplies, the dollar amounts show on the screen. And it would show the amount in which she is starting from with her government assistance and also the pennies from her value made check. But it shows you the sacrifices she would make when choosing a sponge over bread, because at this point, her job is more important than her eating right now. And while Alex is learning the ways of the system, the original author, Stephanie, explains, "When people think of food stamps, they don't envision someone like me. Someone plain-faced and white. Someone like the girl that they'd known in high school. Someone who'd been quiet but nice. Someone like a neighbor. Someone like them. Maybe that made them too nervous about their situation. Maybe they saw in me the chance of their own fragile circumstances that with one lost job, with one divorce, they would be in the same place as me." And that's exactly what the Netflix series evokes. It gives you this deep sense of that could be me. And it could have been you. Had you made one wrong decision or had bad luck or lost a job or found yourself deep in a system, it felt impossible to get out. It also shows you the judgment people pass at the checkout, at stores, when someone who looks oh so normal is living off of welfare. She also says, "I felt like sitting down meant I wasn't doing enough. Like the sort of lazy welfare recipient I was assumed to be. Time lounging to read a book felt overly indulgent. Almost as though Such leisure was reserved for another class. I had to work constantly. I had to prove my worth was receiving government benefits. Now, I'm not going to explain each episode, but I'm going to go into the next prolific moment that I know made the audience feel anger. So Alex is working on herself. She has a job. She's making friends in the shelter. She's going to be moving out of the crisis shelter and into subsidized housing that is supplied by them. Now, subsidized housing that only has one bedroom. So Alex, being the good mom that she is, sleeps on the couch in order to give her daughter a bedroom. Now, let's discuss the condition of a lot of these subsidized houses, because they're not typically in good standing condition. It's extremely common that they're unkept, that they are destroyed, that maybe they have holes, maybe they have dirty carpets. And in Alex's situation, her apartment had mold, and it didn't affect Alex right away, but the few days of the week that her child would come stay with her, it made her sick. So the only affordable housing and option now has to be taken away, because legally, that apartment now needs to be renovated, shut down, taken care of, because that is not a safe living condition for anyone. But what does this mean for Alex? Now she needs to search for housing on government grants. And while hunting for the house is the easy part, because again, she seems normal and people love her. They judge her by her look. She's a young mother who's white. She left the dad. She needs a fresh start. No problem. But the second that she brings up, if they accept a subsidized grant program, you see every single face drop and they turn her away instantly. They don't ask about her situation. They don't ask what she does for a living, how to make up the rest of the money, nothing. They just say no. They're not willing to decrease their profits in order to help. So why? Why do people do this? Is it because they have no heart? Is it because maybe they understand the grant means she essentially has no funds and it could be a liability? It's tough. It's a hard situation to look at, because as a watcher, you so badly would like to think that in the situation yourself, you would obviously give her the apartment. You would take her on as a tenant and take the decrease in revenue. Everything would be fine. You'd be saving someone. Life would be amazing. It's not that easy of a decision. Many people in welfare are abusing that system. Many people take advantage, and that's why so many landlords are not willing to take the chance on enlisting in those government programs. A lot of people also in those government grants and in those systems, they damage property. They become squatters. There's so many ifs and so many buts. It's difficult. So you see both sides. You see why someone wouldn't want to take it on, but you also deep down, you just hope that someone's going to be a good person and help, because that's what Alex needs. She just needs someone to believe in her. She just needs support. She just needs help. Finally, someone does. Someone is willing to take a chance on her, and Alex moves into a beautiful guest house on a property that she actually negotiated. She was able to negotiate doing yard work and cleaning for discounted rent. And this really makes Alex feel optimistic. However, since this is only a couple episodes in, you can imagine setbacks are going to keep coming. Now, she's in this beautiful house. It's her daughter's birthday, and she's going to be throwing a birthday party. Of course, father of the child is invited. And what happens at this birthday party is her alcoholic partner, after their daughter's birthday party, breaks in to the landlord's main house, trashes their living room in an absolute fit of rage to try to find Alex. What happens next is infuriating, because these people, out of the goodness of their heart, believed in Alex. Now they were put into danger because of her situation and because of her partner. So she loses her apartment, and Alex is right back at square one. She's homeless. She's going to lose the daycare she was able to secure for her daughter. And what really starts to develop at this point in the show is the extremely complicated relationship with her ex. Because while she is infuriated with him, she also has a layer of sympathy for him, because he is an addict. And you can tell that she still loves him. You can tell that she still has love for him as the father of her child. And she really sees this addiction as a cry for help. And while she loses her house, she's torn. Does she go back to an emergency shelter? Or does she go back with her partner, try to make things work? or this is kind of where the relationship with her father really comes into play. And as a watcher, you're trying to understand her thought process of, does going back make sense? Does reaching out to her father, even though they have a difficult relationship, does that make sense? What about her mother? And what it comes down to is, if she went back to her abuser, her child would have their father. They would have their mother 24/7. She would have a warm bed. She would have a house with no mold. Her daughter wouldn't be sick anymore. And it's easy to go back to. It's so easy to get stuck into routine. Change is the hardest. And that's why so many people stay in their current circumstances. That change and taking that step is the hardest. But Alex isn't ready to go back. She isn't going to go back yet. More of the plot unfolds and you really begin to uncover why Alex has a difficult relationship with her father. You quickly find out it is due to his own abusive history with her mother and her as a child. They start to show you flashbacks and you really get to understand how the cycle of abuse was perpetuated through generational trauma. Her dad and her partner are close in the show. This actually gives you an understanding as to why. They're similar. They're almost the same person. Her dad, a recovering alcoholic, a history of abuse, and explosive anger. Her partner, recovering alcoholic, history of abuse, explosive anger. And what has happened is that Alex has manifested her childhood into her adulthood. And this is so incredibly common because the love that we see as children, that becomes our definition of love. And so that is the love that we subconsciously search for in adulthood. And we don't realize it. And what happens is we usually just accept it for what it is. We don't think that we deserve any better because we don't know better. We don't understand that there's more out there. And since this is our definition of love, we don't really understand anyone else's perspective of love. We just understand what we see and what we have seen in our past. And as the story goes on, you really see Alex's dad stand up for Sean, the partner. He gives him excuses time and time again. He gives him reasons as to why he is the way that he is. He actually becomes his sober partner. Alex begins to believe that she's been manipulated yet again by both of them. Her father never protects her because if he protected her from Sean being an abusive partner, that would mean admitting his own fault. That would mean he would have to admit what he did to her mother and to her. And that would mean admitting that he did something wrong as a father. And he's not willing to do that. In the series, you see that he is not willing to admit what he did in the past. So Alex distanced herself very quickly from her father yet again as she works through this trauma. And she works through the perpetuated cycle that's been passed down through generations. Now, let's actually talk about this generational trauma. I think that this isn't something that's talked about enough, and it's necessary because this generational trauma that Alex is experiencing is so common with someone her age, with our age, and I say our age, I'm late 20s, because our parents' generations didn't talk about feelings. Not only did they not talk about feelings, they didn't discuss mental health. It wasn't a topic of conversation that was norm. It wasn't normalized. It was taboo and it was deemed not polite. So you just didn't talk about it. You didn't talk about your problems. You didn't talk about any kind of mental struggle or any kind of difficulty you were experiencing internally. Now, generational trauma is exactly what it sounds like. A parent can pass down their history of trauma to their children if the trauma has not been processed and then worked through. Many older generations were not open to therapy, and they were really taught to just suck it up because they were taught that shit happens and that psychological damage was almost just a part of living and a part of life. They didn't receive any kind of validation for pain or uncomfortable feelings or fearful situations that they endured. Now, Alex's relationship with her ex is growing even more complicated. It's intertwined with her father and it's intertwined with generational trauma and fleeing from her father's house due to the realization that he didn't make her feel safe. She is now left again with nowhere to go and nowhere for her daughter to essentially have a home with her. And that's what this all comes down to. taking care of her daughter. So through this process, her ex, Sean, he seems to be working on himself. He's sober. He's going to AA meetings. He has her father, which not ideal, but as a sober sponsor. He maybe even puts on a little bit of charm. And all it took was one night of Alex letting down her guard because of the pain she was feeling towards her father. And she was sucked right back in to her ex's charm and to the possibility of being a family. So the moment we were all waiting for, she goes back to him and the cycle of abuse begins again. Now, this time is worse. This time, he knows what she is capable of. He knows that she will leave. So what you see is him being so sweet and on his best behavior for weeks on end. You, as an onlooker, understand that this is all manipulation and you're watching this happen and you so badly just want to scream, this is all a game. This isn't real. But to her, it is real because she just wants to believe it's real. She wants to believe people change. She has so much sympathy for addiction. And as an onlooker, it's frustrating. It's so frustrating to see someone be manipulated and see all of the tactics actually work. So what starts to happen is Sean loses his job. They were claiming that he was drunk at work, even though he's attending AA. Was he? Yes, he was secretly drinking. So what happens is Alex is then forced to quit her job because they have no money to continue to pay for any kind of daycare, and she needs to stay home and be with the kid while he tries to find another job because it's just going to save them money in the long run on daycare. And a mother should be home with her child is the excuse that he constantly gives her. And what you see happen when Alex loses that job is she actually slowly starts to lose herself. She lost her freedom and she really starts to lose all progress that she had made when she was living in the shelter and outside of these four walls. So she loses her job. Then he takes her car away. Then he starts to isolate her, which is a tactic commonly used by abusers. They will make their partners fully dependent on them, and they do so, and he did so, by financially constraining her. So he ended up taking away any bank card, credit card, access to money. And any money she had to formally request from her partner. And she needed to have a good explanation for it too. Otherwise, he can deny the request and not give her any money. He believed that he was rationing their funds since he didn't have a job and they really needed to be careful with money. We all know this is abuse. Next, they would physically make sure they were isolated. They live in an extremely remote area of the woods, and she has no vehicle to get her out of there, even if she wanted to, even if there was an emergency. And he takes the only vehicle that they do have every day to try to find a job. And eventually he does get a job. So she has no way of leaving this remote mobile home that they live in unless she walks for miles and miles and miles to a gas station that's nearby. Thirdly, he isolates her by alienating friends. So the entire time, Alex doesn't have any kind of support systems. She really only has friends because they were his friends and they've always sided with him, and they just didn't want to get in the middle of things, which is extremely common in situations in partnerships where there's abuse. There was no physical harm. Okay, you guys fight. So what? I don't want to get in the middle of it. And all of these things just build and build and build on top of each other. And it makes Alex feel worse every single time. Something else is taken away from her. And as you're watching this, you can't help but be frustrated. You're full of rage, you're full of sympathy, but also you're angry with her because she went back. And now I've mentioned this before in other episodes, but it takes on average 7 times for a victim to leave their abuser. It's never as easy as just leave. And whether that's because of the financial dependency, the isolation, or the fact that they don't have a support system, everyone has the reason. And the reason will never make sense to anyone else. And that's why so many people don't bother divulging any knowledge to other people about the abuse. They don't want to divulge information. They don't want to admit what is going on because they stayed or they went back. And they understand that that could, in the eyes of someone else who's being judgmental, damage their character. So they don't bother reaching out. They don't bother getting help. They don't bother finding support. They sit with the abuse day after day, accepting that this is a consequence of their actions. The action being that they went back, that they chose this life again. But it's not that simple. I think that's one of the main takeaways from this series, is that it's just not that simple. Another huge takeaway is the underlying theme of poverty and the outdated systems. But there's also the theme of understanding how deep-rooted emotional abuse is, and that it goes beyond name-calling, it goes beyond breaking glass, punching holes in walls. It really shines the light on generational trauma and how easy it is to pass down those unresolved feelings. And it shines light on mental health and how difficult it is for those suffering from specific diagnoses to fit into society. Her mother, the entire time that Alex is going through her own battle, she is having her own battle with a mental health crisis of being an undiagnosed bipolar person. And it also sheds light on how society is really made for and tailored to upper and middle class. So if you haven't watched the series and you listen to this, you're probably like, what is going on? I didn't divulge every little detail. So you still can go back. You can still watch it and get so much out of it. But to summarize, this show just makes you feel. It makes you uncomfortable. And at some point, I think I even felt a certain level of disgust as I watched someone experience gaslighting, falling for manipulation. And as someone who comes from a similar upbringing, the show brought me to tears on a regular basis. It really made me happy to see something modern depicting what emotional abuse for children and poverty is truly like. It showed what the struggle actually looks like. And it also made me really sad because this is the first time that I've watched a show that made me feel seen and heard and not alone in my own history and my own trauma. It showed me that there's others who have experienced a life similar to mine, which also made me feel sad. It's difficult to watch, but it's also comforting. So it made a lot of conflicting emotions arise. And I know that's what it did for so many people. And what I want to say is, first, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that emotional abuse is now becoming a topic of conversation and taken seriously. It isn't talked about enough. I seriously hope that this is the start of change. I hope that the laws will change. I hope that victims will be taken more seriously, that we understand that bones, bruises, those are all going to heal, but psychological damage caused by trauma can last a lifetime and be passed down through generations if it is not taken care of. This was a really heavy episode of the podcast, so I'm going to leave it here. Please take some time to decompress. If you've watched the show, you've read the book, send me a DM. I want to talk more about this. I would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you so much for listening. If this hits close to home, just know that I see you, that I'm here for you. I'll see you next time.